of a giant tree is not much larger than the tree itself. The interesting part is that some tiny plants have a cocoon almost as big as a man's body and three times its width. Those are power plants. They share the largest amount of emanations with man. Not the emanations of awareness, but other emanations in general. Another thing unique about plants is that their luminosities have different casts. They are pinkish in general, but their awareness is pink. Poisonous plants are a pale yellow pink, and medicinal plants are a bright violet pink. The only ones that are white pink are power plants. Some are murky white, others are brilliant white. But the real difference between plants and other organic beings is the location of their assemblage points. Plants have it on the lower part of their cocoon, while other organic beings have it on the upper part of their cocoon. With the inorganic beings, some have it on the lower part of their containers. Those are thoroughly alien to man, but akin to plants. Others have it anywhere on the upper part of their containers. Those are close to man and other organic creatures. The old seers were convinced that plants have the most intense communication with inorganic beings. They believed that the lower the assemblage point, the easier for plants to break the barrier of perception. Very large trees and very small plants have their assemblage points extremely low in their cocoon. Because of this, a great number of the old seers' sorcery techniques were means to harness the awareness of trees and small plants in order to use them as guides to descend to what they called the deepest levels of the dark regions. You understand, of course, that when they thought they were descending to the depths, they were in fact pushing their assemblage points to assemble other perceivable worlds with those seven great bands. They taxed their awareness to the limit and assembled worlds with five great bands that are accessible to seers only if they undergo a dangerous transformation. In their aberration, they believed it was worth their while to break all the barriers of perception, even if they had to become trees to do that. It is very easy in the path of knowledge to get lost in intricacies and morbidity. Seers are up against great enemies that can destroy their purpose, muddle their aims, and make them weak. Enemies created by the warrior's path itself, together with the sense of indolence, laziness, and self-importance that are all integral parts of the daily world. The mistakes the ancient seers made as a result of indolence, laziness, and self-importance were so enormous and so grave that the new seers had no option but to scorn and reject their own tradition. The most important thing the new seers needed was practical steps in order to make their assemblage points shift. Since they had none, they began by developing a keen interest in seeing the glow of awareness, and as a result, they worked out three sets of techniques that became their cornerstone. With these three sets, the new seers accomplished a most extraordinary and difficult feat. They succeeded in systematically making the assemblage point shift away from its customary position. The old seers had also accomplished that feat, but by means of capricious idiosyncratic maneuvers. What the new seers saw in the glow of awareness resulted in the sequence in which they arranged the old seers' truths about awareness. This is known as the mastery of awareness. From that, they developed the three sets of techniques. The first is the mastery of stalking. The second is the mastery of intent. And the third is the mastery of dreaming. I taught you these three sets from the very first day we met. Stalking had very humble and fortuitous origins. It started from an observation the new seers made that when warriors steadily behave in ways not customary for them, the unused emanations inside their cocoons begin to glow, and their assemblage points shift in a mild, harmonious, barely noticeable fashion. Stimulated by this observation, the new seers began to practice the systematic control of their behavior. They called this practice the art of stalking. The name, although objectionable, is appropriate because stalking entails a specific kind of behavior with people. Behavior that can be categorized as surreptitious. The new seers, armed with this technique, tackled the known in a sober and fruitful way. By continual practice, they made their assemblage points move steadily. Stalking is one of the two greatest accomplishments of the new seers, and stalking is merely behavior with people. You can now understand that shifting the assemblage point was the reason why the new seers placed such a high value on the interaction with petty tyrants. Petty tyrants force seers to use the principles of stalking, and in doing so, help seers to move their assemblage points. Stalking belongs exclusively to the new seers. They are the only seers who have to deal with people. The old ones were so wrapped up in their sense of power that they didn't even know that people existed until people started clobbering them on the head. The mastery of intent, together with the mastery of stalking, are the new seers' two masterpieces, which mark the arrival of the modern-day seers. In their efforts to gain an advantage over their oppressors, the new seers pursued every possibility. They knew that their predecessors had accomplished extraordinary feats by manipulating a mysterious and miraculous force, which they could only describe as power. The new seers had very little information about that force, so they were obliged to examine it systematically through seeing. Their efforts were amply rewarded when they discovered that the energy of alignment is that force. They began by seeing how the glow of awareness increases in size and intensity as the emanations inside the cocoon are aligned with the emanations at large. They used that observation as a springboard, just as they had done with stalking, and went on to develop a complex series of techniques to handle that alignment of emanations. At first, they referred to those techniques as the mastery of alignment. Then they realized that what is involved is much more than alignment. What is involved is the energy that comes out of the alignment of emanations. They called that energy will. Will became the second basis. The new seers understood it as a blind, impersonal, ceaseless burst of energy that makes us behave in the ways we do. Will accounts for our perception of the world of ordinary affairs, and indirectly, through the force of that perception, it accounts for the placement of the assemblage point in its customary position. The new seers examined how the perception of the world of everyday life takes place and saw the effects of will. They saw that alignment is ceaselessly renewed in order to imbue perception with continuity. To renew alignment every time with the freshness that it needs to make up a living world, the burst of energy that comes out of those very alignments is automatically rerouted to reinforce some choice alignments. This new observation served the new seers as another springboard that helped them reach the third basis of the set. They called it intent, and they described it as the purposeful guiding of will, the energy of alignment. As time passed and the new seers established their practices, they realized that under the prevailing conditions of life, stalking only moved the assemblage points minimally. For maximum effect, stalking needed an ideal setting. It needed petty tyrants in positions of great authority and power. It became increasingly difficult for the new seers to place themselves in such situations. The task of improvising them or seeking them out became an unbearable burden. The new seers deemed it imperative to see the indescribable force's emanations in order to find a more suitable way to move the assemblage point. As they tried to see the emanations, they were faced with a very serious problem. They found out that there is no way to see them without running a mortal risk, and yet they had to see them. That was the time when they used the old seers' technique of dreaming as a shield to protect themselves from the deadly blow of the indescribable force's emanations. And in so doing, they realized that dreaming was in itself the most effective way to move the assemblage point. One of the strictest commands of the new seers was that warriors have to learn dreaming while they are in their normal state of awareness. Following that command, I began teaching you dreaming almost from the first day we met. Dreaming has to be taught in normal awareness because dreaming is so dangerous and dreamers so vulnerable. It is dangerous because it has inconceivable power. It makes dreamers vulnerable because it leaves them at the mercy of the incomprehensible force of alignment. The new seers realized that in our normal state of awareness, we have countless defenses that can safeguard us against the force of unused emanations that suddenly become aligned and dreamy. Dreaming, like stalking, began with a simple observation. The old seers became aware that in dreams, the assemblage point shifts slightly to the left side in a most natural manner. That point indeed relaxes when man sleeps, and all kinds of unused emanations begin to glow. The old seers became immediately intrigued with that observation and began to work with that natural shift until they were able to control it. They called that control dreaming, or the art of handling the dreaming body. There is hardly a way of describing the immensity of their knowledge about dreaming. Very little of it, however, was of any use to the new seers. So when the time of reconstruction came, the new seers took for themselves only the bare essentials of dreaming to aid them in seeing the indescribable forces' emanations and to help them move their assemblage points. Seers, old and new, understand dreaming as being the control of the natural shift that the assemblage point undergoes in sleep. To control that shift does not mean in any way to direct it, but to keep the assemblage point fixed at the position where it naturally moves in sleep, a most difficult maneuver that took the old seers enormous effort and concentration to accomplish. Dreamers have to strike a very subtle balance, for dreams cannot be interfered with, nor can they be commanded by the conscious effort of the dreamer, and yet the shift of the assemblage point must obey the dreamer's command, a contradiction that cannot be rationalized, but must be resolved in practice. After observing dreamers while they slept, the old seers hit upon the solution of letting dreams follow their natural course. They have seen that in some dreams, the assemblage point of the dreamer would shift considerably deeper into the left side than in others. This observation posed to them the question of whether the content of the dream makes the assemblage point move, or the movement of the assemblage point by itself produces the content of the dream by activating unused emanations. They soon realized that the shifting of the assemblage point into the left side is what produces dreams. The further the movement, the more vivid and bizarre the dream. Inevitably, they attempted to command their dreams, aiming to make their assemblage points move deeply into the left side. Upon trying it, they discovered that when dreams are consciously or semi-consciously manipulated, the assemblage point immediately returns to its usual position. Since what they wanted was for that point to move, they reached the unavoidable conclusion that interfering with dreams was interfering with the natural shift of the assemblage point. From there, the old seers went on to develop their astounding knowledge on the subject, a knowledge which had a tremendous bearing on what the new seers aspired to do with dreaming, but was of little use to them in its original form. Thus far, you have understood dreaming as being the control of dreams, and every one of the exercises I have given you to perform, such as finding your hands in your dreams, was not, although it might seem to be, aimed at teaching you to command your dreams. Those exercises were designed to keep your assemblage point fixed at the place where it had moved in your sleep. It is here that the dreamers have to strike a subtle balance. All they can direct is the fixation of their assemblage points. Seers are like fishermen equipped with a line that casts itself wherever it may. The only thing they can do is keep the line anchored at the place where it sinks. Wherever the assemblage point moves in dreams is called the dreaming position. The old seers became so expert at keeping their dreaming position that they were even able to wake up while their assemblage points were anchored there. The old seers called that state the dreaming body, because they controlled it to the extreme of creating a temporary new body every time they woke up at a new dreaming position. I have to make it clear to you that dreaming has a terrible drawback. It belongs to the old seers. It's tainted with their mood. I've been very careful in guiding you through it, but still, there is no way to make sure. I'm warning you about the pitfalls of dreaming, which are truly stupendous. In dreaming, there is really no way of directing the movement of the assemblage point. The only thing that dictates that shift is the inner strength or weakness of dreamers. Right there, we have the first pitfall. At first, the new seers were hesitant to use dreaming, It was their belief that dreaming, instead of fortifying, made warriors weak, compulsive, capricious. The old seers were all like that. In order to offset the nefarious effect of dreaming, since they had no other option but to use it, the new seers developed a complex and rich system of behavior called the warrior's way, or the warrior's path. With that system, the new seers fortified themselves and acquired the inner strength they needed to guide the shift of the assemblage point in dreams. The strength that I'm talking about is not conviction alone. No one could have had stronger convictions than the old seers, and yet they were weak to the core. Internal strength means a sense of equanimity, almost of indifference, a feeling of being at ease, but above all, it means a natural and profound bent for examination, for understanding. The new seers called all these traits of character sobriety. The conviction that the new seers have is that a life of impeccability by itself leads unavoidably to a sense of sobriety, and this in turn leads to the movement of the assemblage point. I've said that the new seers believed that the assemblage point can be moved from within. They went one step further and maintained that impeccable men need no one to guide them, that by themselves, through saving their energy, they can do everything that seers do. All they need is a minimal chance, just to be cognizant of the possibilities that seers have unraveled. All that is required is impeccability, energy, and that begins with a single act that has to be deliberate, precise, and sustained. If that act is repeated long enough, one acquires a sense of unbending intent, which can be applied to anything else. If that is accomplished, the road is clear. One thing will lead to another until the warrior realizes his full potential. When a warrior understands all of that, it will indeed be a God-sent example of the strength that I am talking about. At that point, his assemblage point will have shifted. It will have been moved by sobriety to a position that fosters understanding, instead of being moved by capriciousness to a position that only enhances self-importance. The name dreaming body means a feeling, a surge of energy that is transported by the movement of the assemblage point to any place in this world or to any place in the seven worlds available to man. The procedure for getting to the dreaming body starts with an initial act which, by the fact of being sustained, breeds unbending intent. Unbending intent leads to internal silence, and internal silence to the inner strength needed to make the assemblage point shift in dreams to suitable positions. This sequence is the groundwork. The development of control comes after the groundwork has been completed. It consists of systematically maintaining the dreaming position by doggedly holding on to the vision of the dream. Steady practice results in a great facility to hold new dreaming positions with new dreams, not so much because one gains deliberate control with practice, but because every time this control is exercised, the inner silence gets fortified. Fortified inner silence, in turn, makes the assemblage point shift into dreaming positions which are more and more suitable to fostering sobriety. In other words, dreams by themselves become more and more manageable, even orderly. The development of dreamers is indirect. That's why the new seers believed we can do dreaming by ourselves, alone. Since dreaming uses a natural built-in shift of the assemblage point, we should need no one to help us. What we badly need is sobriety, and no one can give it to us or help us get it except ourselves. Without it, the shift of the assemblage point is chaotic, as our ordinary dreams are chaotic. So, all in all, the procedure for getting to the dreaming body is impeccability in our daily life. Once sobriety is acquired and the dreaming positions become increasingly stronger, the next step is to wake up in any dreaming position. That maneuver, although made to sound simple, is really a very complex affair, so complex that it requires not only sobriety, but all the attributes of warriorship as well, especially intent. Intent, being the most sophisticated control of the force of alignment, is what maintains, through the dreamer's sobriety, the alignment of whatever emanations have been lit up by the movement of the assemblage point. There is one more formidable pitfall of dreaming, the very strength of the dreaming body. For example, it is very easy for the dreaming body to gaze at the indescribable force's emanations uninterruptedly for long periods of time. But it is also very easy, in the end, for the dreaming body to be totally consumed by them. Seers who gazed at the indescribable force's emanations without their dreaming bodies died, and those who gazed at them with their dreaming bodies burned with the fire from within. The new seers solved the problem by seeing in teams. While one seer gazed at the emanations, others stood by ready to end the scene. It's perfectly possible for a group of seers to activate the same unused emanations. And in this case also, there are no known steps. It just happens. There is no technique to follow. In dreaming together, something in us takes the lead, and suddenly we find ourselves sharing the same view with other dreamers. What happens is that our human condition makes us focus the glow of awareness automatically on the same emanations that other human beings are using. We adjust the position of our assemblage points to fit the others around us. We do that on the right side in our ordinary perception, and we also do it on the left side while dreaming together. Any warrior can be successful with people, provided that he moves his assemblage point to a position where it is immaterial whether people like him, dislike him, or ignore him. The two basic qualities of warriors are sustained effort and unbending intent. It goes without saying that the most difficult thing in the warrior's path is to make the assemblage point move. That movement is the completion of the warrior's quest. To go on from there is another quest. It is the seer's quest proper. In the warrior's way, the shift of the assemblage point is everything. The old seers absolutely failed to realize this truth. They thought the movement of the point was like a marker that determined their positions on a scale of worth. They never conceived that it was that very position which determined what they perceived. The position of the assemblage point dictates how we behave and how we feel. The way to move that point is to establish new habits, to will it to move. The only way to deal with peerless warriors is to not have self-importance, so that one can celebrate them unbiasedly. Realizations are of two kinds. One is just pep talk, great outbursts of emotion and nothing more. The other is the product of a shift of the assemblage point. It is not coupled with an emotional outburst, but with action. The emotional realizations come years later, after warriors have solidified, by usage, the new position of their assemblage points. The earth itself is a living being. The old seers saw that the earth has a cocoon. They saw that there is a ball encasing the earth, a luminous cocoon that entraps the indescribable force's emanations. The earth is a gigantic, sentient being subjected to the same forces we are. The old seers, on discovering this, became immediately interested in the practical uses of that knowledge. The result of their interest was that the most elaborate categories of their sorcery had to do with the earth. They considered the earth to be the ultimate source of everything we are. The old seers were not mistaken in this respect, because the earth is indeed our ultimate source. It was the old seers who, on discovering that perception is alignment, stumbled onto something monumental, that the magic key that opens the earth's doors is made of internal silence plus anything that shines. Just cut off the internal dialogue. The key to everything is the first-hand knowledge that the earth is a sentient being, and as such can give warriors a tremendous boost. It is an impulse that comes from the awareness of the earth itself at the instant in which the emanations inside warriors' cocoons are aligned with the appropriate emanations inside the earth's cocoon. Since both the earth and man are sentient beings, their emanations coincide, or rather, the earth has all the emanations present in man and all the emanations that are present in all sentient beings, organic and inorganic for that matter. When a moment of alignment takes place, sentient beings use that alignment in a limited way and perceive their world. Warriors can use that alignment either to perceive like everyone else or as a boost that allows them to enter unimaginable worlds. The unknown is not really inside the cocoon of man in the emanations untouched by awareness, and yet it is there in a manner of speaking. When I say that we can perceive seven worlds besides the one we know, don't take it as being an internal affair. The portion of emanations inside man's cocoon is in there only for awareness, and awareness is matching that portion of emanations with the same portion of emanations at large. They are called emanations at large because they are immense, and to say that outside man's cocoon is the unknowable is to say that within the earth's cocoon is the unknowable. However, inside the earth's cocoon is also the unknown, and inside man's cocoon, the unknown is the emanations untouched by awareness. When the glow of awareness touches them, they become active and can be aligned with the corresponding emanations at large. Once that happens, the unknown is perceived and becomes the known. A Nahual never lets anyone know that he is in charge. A Nahual comes and goes without leaving a trace. That freedom is what makes him a Nahual. When man's assemblage point moves beyond a crucial limit, the results are always the same for every man. The technique to make it move may be as different as they can be, but the results are always the same, meaning that the assemblage point assembles other worlds, aided by the boost from the earth. The boost from the earth is the same for every man. The difficulty for the average man is the internal dialogue. Only when a state of total silence is attained can one use the boost. You will corroborate that truth the day you try to use that boost by yourself. It takes years to become an impeccable warrior. In order to withstand the impact of the earth's boost, you must be better than you are now. The speed of that boost will dissolve everything about you. Under its impact, we become nothing. Speed and the sense of individual existence don't go together. There's one thing that you haven't understood yet about the earth being a sentient being. That the supreme awareness of the earth is what makes it possible for us to change into other great bands of emanations. We living beings are perceivers, and we perceive because some emanations inside man's cocoon become aligned with some emanations outside. Alignment, therefore, is the secret passageway, and the earth's boost is the key. Alignment has to be a very peaceful, unnoticeable act. The sobriety needed to let the assemblage point assemble other worlds is something that cannot be improvised. Sobriety has to be mature and become a force in itself before warriors can break the barrier of perception with impunity. The position of the assemblage point is everything, and the world it makes us perceive is so real that it does not leave room for anything except realness. When the assemblage point assembles a world, that world is total. This is the marvel that the old seer stumbled upon and never realized what it was. The awareness of the earth can give us a boost to align other great bands of emanations, and the force of that new alignment makes the world vanish. Every time the old seers made a new alignment, they believed they had descended to the depths below or ascended to the heavens above. They never knew that the world disappears like a puff of air when a new total alignment makes us perceive another total world. To see the indescribable forces emanations, you must first move your assemblage point until you see the cocoon of man. Alignment is a unique force because it either helps the assemblage point shift or it keeps it glued to its customary position. The aspect of alignment that keeps the position stationary is will, and the aspect that makes it shift is intent. One of the most haunting mysteries is how will, the impersonal force of alignment, changes into intent, the personalized force, which is at the service of each individual. The strangest part of this mystery is that the change is so easy to accomplish, but what is not so easy is to convince ourselves that it is possible. There, right there, is our safety catch. We have to be convinced, and none of us wants to be. It is possible for you to intend your assemblage point to shift deeper into your left side, to a dreaming position. Warriors should never attempt seeing unless they are aided by dreaming. To move the assemblage point away from its natural setting and to keep it fixed at a new position is to be asleep. With practice, seers learn to be asleep and yet behave as if nothing is happening to them. For purposes of seeing the cocoon of man, one has to gaze at people from behind as they walk away. It is useless to gaze at people face to face because the front of the egg-like cocoon of man has a protective shield, which seers call the front plate. It is an almost impregnable, unyielding shield that protects us throughout our lives against the onslaught of a peculiar force that stems from the emanations themselves, called the rolling force, or the tumbler. The tumbler is a force from the indescribable force's emanations, a ceaseless force that strikes us every instant of our lives. It is lethal when seen, but otherwise we are oblivious to it in our ordinary lives, because we have protective shields. We have consuming interests that engage all our awareness. We are permanently worried about our station, our possessions. These shields, however, do not keep the tumbler away. They simply keep us from seeing it directly, protecting us in this way from getting hurt by the fright of seeing the balls of fire hitting us. Shields are a great help and a great hindrance to us. They pacify us and at the same time fool us. They give us a false sense of security. A moment will come in your life when you will be without any shields, uninterruptedly at the mercy of the tumbler. It is an obligatory stage in the life of a warrior, known as losing the human form. Seers describe the human form as the compelling force of alignment of the emanations lit by the glow of awareness on the precise spot on which normally man's assemblage point is fixated. It is a force that makes us into persons. Thus, to be a person is to be compelled to affiliate with that force of alignment and consequently to be affiliated with the precise spot where it originates. By reason of their activities, at a given moment the assemblage point of warriors drift toward the left. It is a permanent move, which results in an uncommon sense of aloofness, or control, or even abandon. That drift of the assemblage point entails a new alignment of emanations. It is the beginning of a series of greater shifts. Seers very aptly called this initial shift losing the human form, because it marks an inexorable movement of the assemblage point away from its original setting, resulting in the irreversible loss of our affiliation with the force that makes us persons. Seeing is a euphemism for moving the assemblage point. There are balls of fire that are of crucial importance to human beings because they are the expression of a force that pertains to all details of life and death, something that the new seers called the rolling force. The rolling force is the means through which the indescribable force distributes life and awareness for safekeeping, but it also is the force that, let's say, collects the rent. It makes all living beings die. The ancient seers described the tumbler as an eternal line of iridescent rings or balls of fire that roll on to living beings ceaselessly. Luminous organic beings meet the rolling force head on until the day when the force proves to be too much for them and the creatures finally collapse. By becoming familiar with the rolling force through the mastery of intent, the new seers at a given moment open their own cocoons and the force floods them rather than rolling them up like a curled up sow bug. The final result is their total and instantaneous disintegration. Move your assemblage point first by setting up your unbending intent to move it, and second by letting the context of the situation dictate where it should move. Don't worry about procedures, because most of the really unusual things that happen to seers, or to the average man for that matter, happen by themselves, with only the intervention of intent. You are not consciously refusing to let your assemblage point move. Every human being does that automatically. Something is going to scare the living daylights out of you. Don't give up, because if you do, you'll die. Warriors live with death at their side, and from the knowledge that death is with them, they draw the courage to face anything. The worst that could happen to us is that we have to die, and since that is already our unalterable fate, we are free. Those who have lost everything no longer have anything to fear. Your first attention doesn't want to give up control. The shift of the assemblage point is marked by a change in light. In the daytime, light becomes very dark. At night, darkness becomes twilight. Don't indulge in fear, especially after you have realized that warriors have nothing to fear. When fear disappears, all the ties that bind us dissolve. The Earth's boost is the force of alignment of only the amber emanations. It is a boost that heightens awareness to unthinkable degrees. To the new seers, it is a blast of unlimited consciousness, which they call total freedom. The tumbler's boost, on the other hand, is the force of death. Under the impact of the tumbler, the assemblage point moves to new, unpredictable positions. Technically, as soon as the assemblage point shifts, we are asleep. You are absolutely asleep, without having to be stretched out. During normal sleep, the shift of the assemblage point runs along either edge of man's band. Such shifts are always coupled with slumber. Shifts that are induced by practice occur along the midsection of man's band and are not coupled with slumber. Yet a dreamer is asleep. The new seers maintain their assemblage points along the midsection of man's band. If the shift is a shallow one, like the shift into heightened awareness, the dreamer is almost like anyone else in the street, except for a slight vulnerability to emotions such as fear and doubt. But at a certain degree of depth, the dreamer, who is shifting along the midsection, becomes a blob of light. A blob of light is the dreaming body of the new seers. Such an impersonal dreaming body is conducive to understanding and examination, which are the basis of all that the new seers do. I have given you a detailed account of the two forces that aid our assemblage points to move, the Earth's boost and the rolling force, plus the three techniques worked out by the new seers, stalking, intent, and dreaming, and their effects on the movement of the assemblage point. Now, the only thing left for you to do before the explanation of the mastery of awareness is complete is to break the barrier of perception by yourself. You must move your assemblage point, unaided by anyone, and align another great band of emanations. Not to do this will turn everything you've learned and done with me into merely talk, just words, and words are fairly cheap. When the assemblage point is moving away from its customary position and reaches a certain depth, it breaks a barrier that momentarily disrupts its capacity to align emanations. We experience it as a moment of perceptual blankness. The old seers called that moment the wall of fog, because a bank of fog appears whenever the alignment of emanations falters. There are three ways of dealing with it. It can be taken abstractly as a barrier of perception. It can be felt as the act of piercing a tight paper screen with the entire body, or it can be seen as a wall of fog. There is great comfort and ease in seeing it as a wall of fog, but there is also the grave danger of turning something incomprehensible into something somber and foreboding. Hence my recommendation is to keep incomprehensible things incomprehensible rather than making them part of the inventory of the first attention. Exercises of assembling other worlds allow the assemblage point to gain experience in shifting. The initial boost to dislodge your assemblage point from its usual position comes from intent. Since alignment is the force that is involved in everything, intent is what makes the assemblage point move. The mastery of awareness is what gives the assemblage point its boost. After all, there is really very little to us human beings. We are, in essence, an assemblage point, fixed at a certain position. Our enemy, and at the same time our friend, is our internal dialogue, our inventory. Be a warrior. Shut off your internal dialogue. Make your inventory and then throw it away. The new seers make accurate inventories and then laugh at them. Without the inventory, the assemblage point becomes free. The mold of man is a huge cluster of emanations in the great band of organic life. It is called the mold of man because the cluster appears only inside the cocoon of man. The mold of man is the portion of the indescribable forces emanations that seers can see directly without any danger to themselves. To break the barrier of perception is the last task of the mastery of awareness. In order to move your assemblage point to that position, you must gather enough energy. Anger is a natural reaction to the hesitation of the assemblage point to move on command. It will be a long time before you can apply the principle that your command is the indescribable force's command. That's the essence of the mastery of intent. In the meantime, make a command now not to fret, not even at the worst moments of doubt. It will be a very slow process until that command is heard and obeyed as if it were the indescribable force's command. There is an unmeasurable area of awareness in between the customary position of the assemblage point and the position where there are no more doubts, which is almost a place where the barrier of perception makes its appearance. In that unmeasurable area, warriors fall prey to every conceivable misdeed. Be on the lookout and don't lose confidence, for you will unavoidably be struck at one time or another by gripping feelings of defeat. The new seers recommend a very simple act when impatience or despair or anger or sadness comes their way. They recommend that warriors roll their eyes. Any direction will do. I prefer to roll mine clockwise. The movement of the eyes makes the assemblage point shift momentarily. In that movement, you will find relief. This is in lieu of true mastery of intent. To see the mold of man on your own, unaided by anyone, is an important step because all of us have certain ideas that must be broken before we are free. The seer who travels into the unknown to see the unknowable must be in an impeccable state of being. To be in an impeccable state of being is to be free of rational assumptions and rational fears. The old seers, as well as the mystics of our world, have one thing in common. They have been able to see the mold of man, but not understand what it is. Mystics, throughout the centuries, have given us moving accounts of their experiences. But these accounts, however beautiful, are flawed by the gross and despairing mistake of believing the mold of man to be an omnipotent, omniscient creator. And so is the interpretation of the old seers, who called the mold of man a friendly spirit, a protector of man. The new seers are the only ones who have the sobriety to see the mold of man and understand what it is, the pattern of every human attribute we can think of, and some we cannot even conceive. We are what it stamps us with. Anyone who sees the mold of man automatically assumes that it is God. The new seers have seen that what we call God is a static prototype of humanness without any power. We are simply the product of its stamp. We are its impression. The mold of man is exactly what its name tells us it is, a pattern, a form, a cast that groups together a particular bunch of fiber-like elements which we call man. Real affection cannot be an investment. There are two ways of seeing the mold of man. You can see it as a man or you can see it as a light. That depends on the shift of the assemblage point. If the shift is lateral, the mold is a human being. If the shift is in the midsection of man's band, the mold is a light. The position where one sees the mold of man is very close to that where the dreaming body and the barrier of perception appear. That is the reason the new seers recommend that the mold of man be seen and understood. Freedom is like a contagious disease. It is transmitted. Its carrier is an impeccable Nahual. People might not appreciate that, and that's because they don't want to be free. Freedom is frightening. Remember that. But not for us. The dreaming body and the barrier of perception are positions of the assemblage point, and that knowledge is as vital to seers as knowing how to read and write is to modern man. Both are accomplishments attained after years of practice. The dreaming body is known by different names. The name I like the best is the other. We can be in two places at once. We can experience a sort of perceptual dualism. There is no end to the mystery of man and to the mystery of the world. The only thing that soothes those who journey into the unknown is oblivion. What a relief to be in the ordinary world. For warriors, there are two positions of the assemblage point where there are no more doubts. In one, you have no more doubts because you know everything. In the other, which is normal awareness, you have no doubts because you don't know anything. No rational assumptions should interfere with the actions of a seer. Rationality is a condition of alignment, merely the result of the position of the assemblage point. You have to understand this when you are in a state of great vulnerability. To understand it when your assemblage point has reached the position where there are no doubts is useless, because realizations of that nature are commonplace in that position. It is equally useless to understand it in a state of normal awareness. In that state, such realizations are emotional outbursts that are valid only for as long as the emotion lasts. You can travel by waking up at a distant dreaming position. By moving your assemblage point from normal awareness all the way to the position where the dreaming body appears, your dreaming body can actually fly over incredible distances in the blink of an eyelid. The mystery is in the dreaming position. If it is strong enough to pull you, you can go to the ends of this world or beyond it, just as the old seers did. They disappeared from this world because they woke up at a dreaming position beyond the limits of the known. There is no way of knowing how it is done. Strong emotion or unbending intent or great interest serves as a guide. Then the assemblage point gets powerfully fixed at the dreaming position, long enough to drag there all the emanations that are inside the cocoon. Now you need to have one last clarification. The coherent but irrational realization that everything in the world we have learned to perceive is inextricably tied to the position where the assemblage point is located. If the assemblage point is displaced from that position, the world will cease to be what it is to us.